Hi everyone, it's Ethan McKinley and welcome to Was It Worth It? Now for some reason, I'm not the owner, proprietor or producer of this show. That's Toffer from the Master Debaters. However, I've been asked to do the intro again for this wonderful, wonderful journey of a simple man walking through the annals of film history as we discover, are the pop culture icons, are the films, are the cultural touchstones we cling to so dearly, the reason we wear those cosplay t-shirts, or the reason we go to Forbidden Planet and buy alien action figures, are the films actually worth it? Toffer's only seen a few of the cultural touchstones. I've used that again, but I can't think of any other word, Toffer.
Don't worry about it.
We could do an entire show on what you haven't heard or seen. Yeah. Today, though, the show really is yours, Toffer, because we are here to view, even though we promised to do a Halloween season for Halloween, we're going to do a bunch of horror films, but because it, I think, is opening next week or very shortly, the remake of the 1990 film.
Yeah, Friday the 8th.
So this Friday the 8th, It, the remake slash redo of the classic Stephen King film about a killer clown who's actually not really a clown. It's well, we'll get to that.
Yeah, we will, because the book is very different.
Well, yeah, I'm out of my depth here, because usually it's me schooling you on whatnot. I didn't know anything about It, and I've only seen It today, which is the 1990 Tommy Wallace-directed TV movie that was going to be like a four-part miniseries of 8 hours. And then condensed down to 2 hour and 30 minute chunks, I believe, with commercials.
Lots of fade to black.
Yeah, lots and lots of fade to black. Not as effective as it was displayed in the thing, though. But again, we'll get to that. But you've read the book.
I have, 3 times.
You've seen the original 1990 version. I assume you're going to
see many times
the remake slash reimagining this Friday or this weekend, at least.
I am. I'm going with me mom.
Because we remember sitting together and watching it when I was a wee lad in Scotland.
Because nobody else would come with me.
I'd go with you, I'd see it. Now I've seen this one. I'm interested to see what they do with this, because it's a film, obviously, is a much more condensed time frame.
Apparently it's a two-hour plus film, and it's a two-parter, from what I know.
Really?
From what I've heard. Yeah, they're just sticking with the kids for this one. Instead of going backwards and forwards, I think.
So if this film is commercially successful, they'll do another part, or they've already made the other part, and that'll be released
later. As far as I'm aware, I think they're waiting to see how well it's done. But if you're going off reviews and just the buzz, and Stephen King's word, they're definitely going to make another one. Because he's seen it twice, and he's said himself he didn't expect it to be as scary as it was.
But to mention a film or podcast I'm attached to, The 2-Minute Terminator, we did an entire episode, and James Cameron, who a couple of years ago said that Terminator Genesis was like this awesome, amazing film, and he loved every minute of it as they were stuffing $100 bills into his pocket. I don't know. There is this like resurgence in Stephen King's work of late. There's a lot of kind of films of his coming down the pipeline. I think Castle Rock is a TV series that's going to be coming shortly where...
Tower shit the bed.
Yeah, that's Stephen King's kind of fictitious town in Maine, isn't it, basically?
They all link. Apparently the final book in the Dark Tower series brings every one of his...
Creations together,
yeah.
So that's like...
every loose end.
That's Cujo the rabid dog, Christine the evil car.
Yeah, the turtle. But you won't know about the turtle. We'll get to that.
I said this before, this sounds like a Discworld thing, doesn't it? Like a Terry Pratchett, if the entire world is on the back of a giant space turtle.
Yes.
All right, I'll start with me, because I usually ask you what's up with this, but as you're kind of going to lead the charge in this, because you know more than I do, my experience of Stephen King is just seeing, I guess, those shoddy knockoff films in the 80s. Uh-huh. And I think now we're getting this resurgence, they're kind of redoing, like... or the people that grew up on those films, I guess, are my age now, who now work in films, unlike me. And now, I guess, trying to do justice to them and remake them. So that's why I think we're getting all these like new Stephen King things at least coming. And he's kind of like going, oh, it's amazing. I guess so his son inherits even more than the over $100 million he's worth.
Yeah.
I've seen Cat's Eye, the thing with James Woods, that collection of kind of that... of 3 kind of little horror stories with Drew Barrymore and people like that. I've seen Christine, the evil car. That's, I guess, one of the best ones. I've seen Shawshank, Green Mile, there, Frank Darabont.
Stand By Me,
I've seen. Rob Reiner's film. So they're the kind of, those three the two prison films and Stand By Me are, I guess, his non-horror films, and they're, I guess, the most successful.
Short stories, yeah, there were short stories he did.
And then to go really off the rails, we've got Sleepwalkers, which is like that weird marsupial cat werewolf movie.
Yes.
Graveyard Shift, about a giant bat rat that lives under a cotton mill, again in Castle Rock. Maximum Overdrive, where a comet makes all the electronic items on the in the world come alive and start killing people, and there's like a few survivors fighting trucks and toasters and things, and a Diet Coke can machine. What that for a scene? So that's it. That's all I know really about Stephen King's work. I know he's like very well writes very lurid text. Writes very lurid text.
Yes.
And some of the, like, the sexual themes he has are like super dark, which you mentioned. Yeah. Well, like I said, what book did I said he wrote? And he said I did a bunch of coke and I woke up on Monday morning, and I had an entire novella on my desk.
It was either Christine or Cujo. It was one of them.
I think it was Cujo. But that literally, I guess, is the extent of my knowledge. The general audience, which I guess is me, that's all
cocaine's
we know.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Yeah, so I don't know. I've not read any of the books. I think I started to read Green Mile when it was came out in like serialized books and things. But that is about kind of it, really. I didn't read all the books. I read the Mist short story, and that was it. That's all I know. So how did this come into your life? And why do you obviously like it a lot? So you,
I love this film. I do, and I know it's shit. I know it's shit, right? The first 90 minutes, okay, you can get away with it. You can show it to somebody who's never seen it before, and you go, look, here's a film, and they'll watch 90 minutes, and they'll go, oh, okay, that was all right. Stop watching it there. But I first watched it when I was about, I was 10, and did you used to have the video van? Or did you know of the video van?
Yes, I know, well, there's a video van around here, but I just remember it because it had that very kind of like striking cover of like Tim Curry with the monster hands, like peeling, I guess, the white page down.
We had the video van that used to come round every Thursday night in our estate. And we always used to go on because we just look at the new videos. And that one, I never knew what this film was, but there's another film where like a hand was coming out some grass.
Right.
But that was the cover, and that was next to it, and I'd see that every week, and I'd be like, fucking hell, that looks scary. And like, it was 18, and our video van man wasn't that dodgy. I mean, the ice cream man sold fags and stuff, but the video van man was, he was straight up. But I was around my mates over the 6 weeks, and his mom had rented it, and we kept looking at it and picking it up and going, go on, you put it in. No, yeah, you put it in. And then
straight up, put it in.
Put it in. And then we got 60 minutes in, and then I went, nah, I don't like it. It's too scary. So then from then on, I'd always wanted to see, because the first 60 minutes are obviously the bits where he does all the fucking, in my opinion, the worst shit and the weirdest stuff that happens. I'd never seen anything like it before. You know, I grew up watching fucking Batman every day for my life, and then I watched A Killer Clown, and I was like, oh, this is weird.
And so stuff like the shower scene where he comes out of the plug hole.
Terrified me.
Terrified
me. I mentioned it before, because in Ghosts of Mars, there's a bit where the camera goes right into someone's face, and that's how it shows that they're dead.
Yeah.
He does that a lot as well. That's how it shows that little girl at the start, the camera goes right up into a grill. That fucking terrified me for years. And I don't know why it scares me, but when something comes right close to someone's face, it shits me up. And then I watched it when I was about 13 properly, and then I've just loved it. And I watch it at least once every 6 months. I watch it about twice a year.
So you only got to halfway through the film. Am I right in remembering? Because if I remember back in the day, it was a super wired cassette box with two tapes in. Is that correct?
Yeah, one on one side, one on the other side.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Even the first DVD they released, you had to flip the DVD over and watch the other half on the other side.
Right, okay.
It was only till the Blu-ray came out that it was one full film on the disc.
So does anyone else share your kind of love for it? Because why was it so impactful? Was it just a mix of all this, like, hanging around with a bunch of kids, so you kind of saw yourselves in the kids in the film?
I was the same age, yeah. I was the exact same age. I think I was 10 and they were 11, 12. I think they were 11. So, yes, I was about the same age, and I was just getting curious of horror films because of the video van, and, like, all the videos were displayed, and you were like, oh, what's that one? Like, Hellraiser was another one. That one stood out to me.
Have you seen Hellraiser?
I have. I like it. I like the Hellraiser.
Yeah, Hellraiser's a good one. The first two, anyway, at least.
I love number three. He just fucks everybody up in the club.
In the nightclub.
Yeah.
And then they're running out of like Cenobite ideas. So there's one with CDs in his head and stuff. He's just like, yeah. Oh, look. Wallet man's coming. He throws credit cards at you.
That was the first film I ever saw sex in as well. I was like, oh, this is weird.
Yeah, that's an. As we keep getting a theme now, because we did the Fly, is it? That's coming. We've recorded The Fly.
That'll be out now.
I used to rub one out to the millisecond of side boob you'd see in The Fly. By the same token, I would rub one out to that at the time to a young teenage boy, a very raunchy nightclub sex scene before the chick gets sucked into the pillar of doom.
Weird totem pole thing.
Yeah. I should really look at that again, see if it gets this old man's murder running, no?
I don't know, you're a bit weird. The nightclub scene would probably fucking get your fucking pencil full of lead.
Because as you get more JJ, you need more weird stuff, don't you? So this prompted you to read the book. Have you learned anything as the film was made, or the behind the scenes stuff? Are you like an obsessive to that level with it, or is there not that much information on the film itself?
There's not a lot. They are doing a documentary now, like a crowdfunded documentary. Obviously now the remake's coming out, they're doing, a lot of people are more interested in it. And apparently they are, it has been greenlit and they've got Tim Curry to sit down. They'd better be quick.
And have a lot of patience.
Yeah. Oh, Ethan.
You're going to hell. Sorry, Tim Curry, we love you. Especially you.
Yeah, sorry. So there's not, they're probably easy if you really search for it, but not that I've found like on the surface. But the book, I mean, I don't want to be one of these arseholes because I've got fucking friends that are these arseholes.
The book is better than the film.
The book is much better than the film.
Well, I've not read the book, and I reckon it would be because, yeah, there's two very distinct sides to this film, isn't there? It's the first one's very like Stand By Me / Goonies explorers-y type thing, and then the second half is all about the adults, and they're kind of less interesting than
they're
the kids,
shit.
Really. Yeah.
The director didn't even like the adults. He didn't like the second half. There's a bit of trivia, I know. He didn't. He hated the ending because
the ending's terrible. But we'll get there.
Is that because it's an? We won't mention it now. But is it because it's an unfilmable ending? Kind of.
Yes, it is. I'll explain it all to you later, and you'll understand why. But that's why I'm fascinated about this new film. Like, what the now they've got the budget. What the fuck are they gonna do?
Hmm. I don't know though, because looking at the trailer now, I mean, seeing the trailer for the new film in the months leading up to this, and then like seeing it manifest in this kind of older version, they seem to be kind of hitting the same beats as the kids. They've taken a lot of the same imagery. I mean, is the imagery that like black and white, as it were, on the page, the way it was transposed into the film, like the paper boat and stuff?
I'd say the most iconic scene is the paper boat falling down the drain. That's pretty much exactly the same as in the book. But, like, a lot of things, daft things will change. Like, fucking Stuttering Bill. You messaged me that made me laugh. Stuttering Bill made you laugh, did you?
But, all right, yeah. Basically, yes. The star of the film is Richard Thomas, who, I guess, is the adult Bill Denbrough.
Yes. Big Bill, man.
He gets a message at the start of the film, and it kind of takes him right back to his childhood. When he was
They all get the same fucking.
They do. One thing that did annoy me about the first half is it was this kind of rinse and repeat of like, here's an adult. Yeah. He's got a message from the past, and then this their little idiosyncratic thing that happened when they were a kid.
Yeah, like scratching their eyes or like rubbing their nose or something.
Yeah, all the kid actors for the most part are really good. It's just the adults, weirdly. Jonathan Brandis, who sadly committed suicide in 2003. I'll come to that because I've got to maybe have some trivia attached to that for you. As
did you help him die?
No, but there's a lot of stuff with Corey Haim, Corey Feldman, Elijah Wood.
Yeah, I know where you're gonna go.
And all there's a load of weird stuff coming out now, and they're started linking kind of like past child actors' deaths to this kind of thing, along with Brad Renfro. But we'll get to that. But yes, Richard Thomas, who was in the Waltons originally. You know, he like gets this message from the past, and like all the other actors, it's this kind of like it's almost repeat scene over and over again. The flashbacks of all the kids are really cool, but it keeps coming back to these like very like vanilla, boring adults. I don't think they're and also they're all kind of like weird, super successful.
That's the point of the story, because if you notice, the person who stayed, Mike, He's just a librarian, and he never got out of Derry, so he didn't make anything of himself. And everybody that left all got successful careers.
But is that because they're running away from the past so yeah. much? They're just yeah. overachievers, basically.
Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah.
Okay.
So like Mike didn't leave, so he gets like a nice boring job. Never makes anything of himself. So.
Yeah, so the stuttering scene, Richard Thomas reverts back to his childhood stutter.
Cruel
and
man.
It's not his fault, because I could any of us like do a stutter? The only like stuttery person I can think of who was good in a film is Robert De Niro in Awakenings, but that's not really a stutter. That's more of like a nervous tick.
Yeah.
So yeah, he just starts going. Now, not to be outshone, his wife, played by Olivia Hussey, who plays Audra.
Audra, yeah.
Was she like the producer's wife or cousin, or did she have some like she salacious, scandalous pictures
penis.
Of someone? I also I thought she was Irish. I looked her up, and she's like from Argentina. So I can't like. Have a massive go at her just in case it was just her accent or
her
slender grasp
accent,
of the English language.
Yeah. A lot of the adults, I'd say other than John Ritter, most of the adults aren't brilliant.
Which is weird to me because like Richard Masseur's in it. He was actually in the Thing episode you previously covered in this.
Yeah, The Dog
and
Man.
He's also in another film that I love, an 80s movie called License to Drive with another child actor, Corey Haim, who's no longer with us because of...
Possible suicide.
Annette O'Toole's in it from Superman 3 and Smallville and stuff.
Smallville, still that's looks where pretty I know hot. Her from.
Yeah, so like there's some really good actors in this and people who are still working today, including Audra, who's his bloody wife.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know, there was a lot, like I said, there was a lot of back and forth where you'd meet an adult and then you'd go, oh my God, the past.
Yeah.
And then they'd kind of go back to kind of Stand By Me stuff. That was the most successful, I think, aspect of the film that worked.
It was. It was showing them all meeting and getting to know each other and that sort of shit.
And looking into it, the book It, which yes. I'd like you to tell me all about now, and the listeners, because okay. I'm interested, is a 1986 book.
Yes.
So 3 years before the... Now... I saw a lot of parallels, especially with the shower scene and a lot of these nightmare using your fears against you things. It was very, not copied, but very close in tone and homage in certain scenes. So like Nightmare on Elm Street, where they eventually beat Pennywise, at least, or they kind of twig on to how to defeat him is not to be afraid of him and mm-hmm. face their fears, as it were, which I guess is a lesson to all of us in life.
Very Freddy
generally.
Krueger, yeah. Very Freddy Krueger.
And when they throw like... the alleged, you know, acid on him, his face starts to melt, he throws silver at him and like light shoots out of his head. It was very much imagery taken from the Nightmare on Elm Street films. And I think they're up to the third Nightmare on Elm Street film within that 2 year period. They were knocking him out.
Dream Warriors is a great film.
Great film.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was a lot of stuff that I could see like take from that. The director, of course, Tommy Lee Wallace, was John Carpenter's production designer.
Okay.
Or set person from Halloween. He was at USC along with a bunch of other actors and directors who came out of that kind of like generation, John Carpenter being one, who was the biggest. Tommy Lee Wallace actually came up with the Michael Myers mask.
Yeah, it's just William Shatner, isn't it?
Yeah, but before that, he was going to be a clown mask, and that's why the homage again that at the preamble at the start of the film when it's young Michael Myers killing his sister. So maybe that the seeds of Pennywise were sown there, as it were. So I don't know. Tell me about the book. How does the book differ from the film? I guess we'll have to spoil a little bit of this.
Oh, fucking spoilers. Yeah. Well, the idea of the book was...
if you haven't seen it, watch it first. You can find it all good video outlets. And if you're really cheap, you can probably find
download it illegally.
I know I did.
But the book. The basic idea was he wanted to get in as many... horror icons as possible. He set out to make this the scariest thing he'd ever written, and he says, well, what's scarier than a fucking clown? And he was really the first person to touch on that, because I think everybody's a bit scared of clowns, but he was the first one to put it down and go, look, a clown's scary. So that's why you've got the werewolf, the mummy, fucking who else is in there?
But like you, well, the Universal Studio monsters, aren't they kind of like archetypes?
He puts them all in. So yeah, he set out to shit people up.
I did like the werewolf, actually. I'm not sure if it was a mask or makeup, but I did like the look of the werewolf.
Yeah, it's good, wasn't it? There's
it was much better than the Silver Bullet Werewolf, the other Stephen King film, which I forgot to mention at the top of the show, from 1985, which I really like, except when the ending falls apart when you see the werewolf.
That's a lot. That happens a lot in Stephen King's films.
So, yeah, they're facing their fears. They fight. They're, like, being haunted by these kind of, like, movie monsters in this kid's world. So what else is in the book?
The basic thing of the book is it doesn't touch on it a lot in the film, but, like, these seven kids are all... Like, they don't meet each other by chance, and they're all sort of selected for the purpose of, you're all going to get together, when you're together, there's this fucking bond, and using this bond, you can achieve anything.
So your pure of heartedness defeats evil.
Yes, pretty much, and then that's why when he squirts the inhaler in his face, he says,
"This is battery acid, you slime!"
In the book, it explains that if they all believe that it is battery acid, it is battery acid. That's why the silver bullet works, because if they believe it to hurt it, it will.
Sounds like Fright Night.
It's
what I mean.
It's weird, but like you get to, this is right. It, because you don't know where it's come from, you don't know why it's there, but basically there's a turtle that created the universe. The turtle had a bellyache, and from that bellyache, it created it.
Right.
Now, it is a female alien form, right? So there you go, don't fucking assume gender, because it's a female. So if it's a pregnant female alien thing, which can't be the human eyes can't, like, they can't see what it is in its truest form,
so the mind can't process what it is, yeah, or looks like, because it's too,
so the closest
weird
thing the mind can make it look like is a spider, because it's got legs, so the mind just goes, yeah, it's a spider. And in the book, the final battle happens inside its mind.
Okay.
So, like, Bill is staring into the deadlights, and in his mind, he has to go and find it, with, like, the turtle sort of encouraging him, because the turtle's there as well.
So if the turtle essentially is God in the universe, why doesn't it, is it the devil? It's like opposite or
much,
something that,
yeah,
something that was cast off from the main body of the thing, the way, like,
yeah, the belly
is a fallen,
yeah,
angel.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. I think that's pretty much the theme he's going with. But like,
well, they're fighting giant ethereal turtle ship, cosmic turtle ship.
The turtle can't help for some reason, but it can only encourage. So it's like, yeah, you're doing the right thing. You know how to defeat it. Look inside yourself. It's one of them fucking things. And they have to beat it with something called the Ritual of Chud.
Is cannibalistic humanoid underground dweller, the 1984 B movie, which I think is awesome, where homeless people infected by nuclear waste become monsters.
That's exactly how they have to defeat it. No, but pretty much all he has to do is go inside its mind and repeat. He thrusts his fist into the post and still insists he sees the ghost or something like that. Which, again, in the film, it comes on the typewriter or something, doesn't it?
Yeah,
but it's explained in the book that he uses that to get over his stutter.
Right.
But that's how they have to defeat it in the book. So obviously I can understand why they didn't do that, because that's wank. And you can't do that really, can you? It looks a bit shit. So they went for a shitty spider.
So if it's this unified self-belief that can defeat it, or that evil force, as it were, that manifests in these various forms or personal fears.
Yeah.
How is it one guy fighting him in his mind at the end?
Well, it's Bill for the start, and then Richie turns up and sort of helps him while Ben stamps on all the eggs. Because, spoilers, Eddie dies in the book. Eddie dies in the book a lot better than he fucking dies in the film as well, because he just picks him up. He picks him up and drops him, and it's like, oh.
And he looks like he falls asleep, doesn't he?
Yeah, and then he's
but
dead.
But then they chase, well, in the film I've just seen, it looks like some giant kind of like spider crab.
Yeah.
Type thing, and then they kind of, she shoots some silver at it, which misses. Then she gets him in like his soft underbelly.
Deadlights. Yeah.
And he runs off, and then they kind of
kick the shit out of me.
Kick this giant rubber spider to death, and then pull something out, which I assume is the heart or the brain or something, or his essence.
I always thought it was the unborn thing inside it.
Okay.
But like watching it back, it looks like the heart. So I imagine it is the heart.
So they're stamping on eggs. So it does have a physical form, or it's kind of manifesting itself in a physical reality by laying these eggs. So when it kind of breaks out of the eggs, or however many there are, that will be...
Yeah. Well, it needs to feed, doesn't it? It feeds on kids, but it feeds on the fear of kids. And right. obviously, the more scared you are, the tastier you are, as he says.
Sure.
Which is why it always bothered me that, like, you know when he scares Richie and he's the werewolf? Like, why does he just fucking slice his throat open and eat him? But then you go, oh, he's just scaring him. Because that's what he does.
Building the anxiety.
Yeah, build it up, build it up, build it up, build. Because I think even he knows that these are special kids. Because in the again, in the book, he's scared of them. When they come back, he calls them back because he's fucking pissed off at them. That's why he shows up little George's picture. But he's scared of them in the book.
So there is the bully scene where they kind of follow them into the sewers and they all get kind of like taken out one by one.
You don't hear of that in the book. They just follow them. But Henry's fucking mint in the book. Like, he's a fucking horrible bastard anyway. There's another character in it who's a bit... dead weird. There's like a weird handjob scene where Henry's getting wanked off. And he's fucking weird. And then one of the lads goes, do you want me to put it in my mouth? And then Henry goes, like, oh, gay. And it's fucking... It's
yeah,
weird.
Stephen King has like very like lurid kind of sex scenes in his books, doesn't he?
There's an 11-year-old really orgy.
Yeah, that's an awesome... Yeah, so what in the book then? The bully's just disappear into the sewer?
Yeah, they follow him. And they can hear him behind him, like, you know, I'll kill you. Blah, 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 blah. And then once they've defeated it... they get lost and they can't get out. But the only way they can get out is if they are strong. If their bond is strong, they can achieve anything. And because they've just been through this battle with it, they're all tired and they're all beat down, so they're not strong, they're not together, they're all scared again. So Beverly says, right then, I'm going to bang all of you. And that's what happens. They enter her one by one.
Do you think Stephen King's got some issues he's not worked through?
I honestly think once he's dead, there's going to be some weird shit that comes out of him. Because I don't need to know like what an 11-year-old's breasts look like. Don't explain that to me.
I mean, we have to bear in mind, not to let any of these people off the hook.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Yeah, that as well. But also that time, we were kind of in the midst and tail end of that. Perhaps there was an attitude, because I mean... Anyone listening in America, we've got people like Jimmy Savile, who I guess was our version of Mr. Rogers, worked a lot with children.
Google him.
Had a show called Jim Will Fix It. Just type in Jimmy Savile documentary and you'll find some amazing stuff. But like his level of darkness is almost like a Stephen King character. What I'm saying is like all those kind of like 70s and 80s like public figures we had in England, some of them like politicians and stuff, was it? Kind of, is that just the way things were then? And Stephen King's part of that kind of generation or just before it, where it's just like, well, you know, bit of slap and tickle, never hurt anyone, and it's, you know, 11-year-old girls having orgies.
A lot of homophobia as well, from what I've, in that book especially, but I think that was just of its time.
Yeah, I don't know, it's very strange, because like, I remember when I read The Mist, there was like some weird sex scene, which I barely remember, but I think the kid was sleeping next to him while he was doing it with this woman.
Wouldn't surprise me. Really,
as they were sleeping in one of the aisles of the supermarket, away from these monsters and stuff. I don't know, it always kind of seems to like creep in there. But in the film, the bullies get dispatched by this like white light, and then they see this kind of like jellyfish floating through the air, I think, for the second or third kill.
Yeah. It's dead light, so yeah. It drives you insane, apparently. So what did you think of the first 90 minutes?
I don't know, touch and go. I don't think it's a fault of the story, perhaps, or the film. I think it was like a noble effort, but I think because it's a TV movie, it's got this weird pacing and weird blocking, so everything...
Yeah,
that
you can see where the adverts are, can't you?
Yeah, and I think, is it even the actor's fault that the adult actors were bad, or is it just like, because they just got TV actors, or like... I don't know, because we live in a world now where TV, for the most part, is getting... a lot of the time better than the films we're getting at the movie cinema.
This would have worked brilliantly as a Netflix series.
Yeah, I was going to say they should do it again, but there's a bloody film coming out on Friday. You think, come on, wake up.
Yeah.
The kids and stuff are really good. There's only one weird scene where they kind of dispatch the bullies by throwing stones at them. They try and do this like sweeping camera angle where they all say something and the camera pans on each of their faces.
Yeah.
And they all have a line. But then they forget that there's the last kid that speaks, I think it's the girl, is miles away outside of the group. Yeah. So they all say something, it all makes sense, and it goes pan, pan, pan across. And about 5 seconds go by, and then she delivers the last line of that sentence and completes it. It's just little things like that, really. But no, I liked it. I liked Tim Curry as Pennywise.
A lot of people say he's the glue that holds this together.
Yeah, and when he kind of disappears out of it, which he does for much of the second half.
Yeah.
It does kind of fall apart, and I'm not sure if that's the fault of the director or that's because...
It's the fault of the story, I think.
Yeah, because it was meant to be like a two... No, it got down to two parts, I think. But it was originally four two-hour parts, like an eight-hour miniseries. And I'm not sure if when that was cancelled by the studio and they just said break it down into two parts, a lot of stuff was thrown out, perhaps not by the best script editor. Mm-hmm. And you've got this very like lopsided, unbalanced kind of thing.
Yeah, it's very, very unbalanced. Yeah, that's a good word.
The stuff that worked in it were the kids in the 50s, their story, but then it would cut to an adult going, here's another new adult character we have to let know in the second half.
Yeah.
Oh no, he's having a flashback too. We're back in 1960.
The book does that, though. The book flashes back. And like the two final scenes where they fight it from the 50s and then I think the 80s, that's back to back in the book as well.
Yeah.
That's the last like five or six chapters in the book, which I hope they don't do that in the new film.
I don't know. I think a better director would be able to handle that with a bit more deftness, perhaps, than Tommy Lee Wallace. But he's not a bad director. He's done some good films. Well, I think are good films, like Fright Night 2 and Halloween 3. I know the people screaming into their earphones running, going, you piece of shit, they're terrible, but I really like that.
Halloween 3, the one with the kid?
Halloween 3 is the one with the silver shamrock masks, where John Carpenter didn't want to make any more Halloween films. And like Charlton Heston, when he wanted to leave the Planet of the Apes franchise, went, okay, 20th Century Fox, I'll come back for the second one, but I'll do it as a cameo, and then I have to die. Definitely die on screen, and then someone to go, yes, he's definitely dead, so I can not do any more Planet of the Apes films. So they got this...
The Harrison Ford thing.
Yeah, they got another actor that looks a bit like him to replace him for the entire film, who looks exactly like him and played the same kind of astronaut looking for Charlton Heston. And then Charlton Heston appears at the end and goes, ah, I'm back. Oh, no, I've been shot. Nova, the apes are talking.
That's not bad.
Thank you.
That's all right.
There's about three people that know Charlton Heston is in the audience, but there we go. So, that all the Stand By Me stuff, in commas, that was all great. But, yeah, you do feel the absence of Tim Curry, I think, in the second half. And I think a lot of the nightmare imagery, there was a lot of stuff where it was just Tim Curry going, I'm going to say a line now. And then they just cut to his mouth going,
a lot of that. His lines are good, though.
Kiss me, fat boy.
I fucking love that.
Yeah. That should be a ringtone. All right, I've got a question for you. There was a weird thing with his wife and another equally weird actor with a weird accent. Was he an agent of, like... Richard Thomas's?
He was her manager, I think.
He was her manager, okay.
Her agent slash manager.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was like, why is this scene in it? And where's this going? Is he going to go, well, if you...
You don't suck my dick, bitch.
Give me some sugar, baby, and I'll sort your career out. And he just went, yeah, well, that's that. And goodbye. But he had this, like, another bizarre accent. He was like he wasn't Mexican.
No, it was just weird.
He was from somewhereville. I have no idea. It wasn't Smallville, that's for sure. That was a strange scene. So, yeah, I thought it was a bit patchy and uneven. I don't think they used Tim Curry to his best. It's not Tim Curry's fault. I just think a lot of the times in Tim Curry appeared, he was in like a starkly lit white room.
Yeah.
And it was just a man in a clown outfit. I think if they did a bit of kind of shenanigans with the camera and lit it better.
Yeah.
And kind of perhaps stage those scenes where Pennywise appears, I think it would have been much more effective and be held in high regard than perhaps it already is. Because I know everyone loves and mentions Tim Curry at the very least, even if the film perhaps isn't as well remembered.
Yeah, a lot of people fucking love Tim Curry's performance in it down there.
Looking back at it now, what do you think of it now? Because I can, like Into the Night we did last week, I can't justify why
exactly the same. I understand now, but don't know. It's not like I've had to defend this film. It's like to a casual viewer, you'll watch it and like even just the shower scene where he rips the floor open.
I think that was one of my favourite bits.
Was it really?
Yeah, because one, it was very Nightmare on Elm Street where the kind of showers came on, then they all came out. But I like the way the kind of like. He couldn't get through the plug hole, as it were, the sinkhole.
Yeah, so
he just opened it.
Yeah.
And it became this like weird claymation-y thing.
Yeah. But that's good. That all the imagery of using Tim Curry is great. Like, even in the graveyard scene, where he's like...
Take your pick, Bert, Billy Boy. Oops, except for the one on the end. That's already taken. sorry.
Again, I think that's class. Like, some of the lines are fucking mint, and it still sticks with me. Like, when he's on the moon as well, that shit me up when I was little. Because, like, just seeing that image on the moon, and, like, that is another thing I'll ask you as well. He appears as Henry's dead friend underneath the bed.
Yeah.
And passes him the switchblade. Does that work then?
What, how can a vision give you a physical knife?
That's one of the things that really, really still bothers me. How does that work? What, can he just go up and kill the guard himself?
Well, it's not a plot hole then, is it? It's a plot abyss.
Yeah, it is, when you think about it, because the book doesn't even really explain it.
I don't know.
The book goes a lot into the history, and there's a really good bit in the book where there's like a gang fight in the streets.
Right.
And there's loads of different gangs shooting each other and stuff like that. And then someone looks out to a window, and standing on a wall at like a 90-degree angle, he's Pennywise just standing there laughing. And I think that's a dead good image. And I don't know why they end on that. But they don't really go into the history, do they?
They don't. I don't know. I mean, because I've got no history with this film. Although, having said that, it's been very much a part of my like mental cultural furniture. Because I do remember that super wide giant video box. I remember that very like classic image of Tim Curry like pulling the page back,
or
the cover of the poster. So I certainly knew of the film. I know of the film.
Yeah. Why have you missed that then?
I don't know. I mean, I think I was put off by the running time, and it was like, oh god, I've got to watch two of these things. So I don't know. Maybe I knew then that it wouldn't be my thing. But I was certainly a horror film kid, especially like then. And weirdly, I think a lot of the things I've got in my collection are very horror-related, even though I would never class myself as a horror fan.
Really, I'll class you as the Thing, The Fly.
Yeah, but I think that because they're very... I always associate horror with like low-budget, kind of wacky, lots of gore.
They did have to fight for the blood that was in this film, the blood that came off the photo album. Apparently, that much blood hadn't been seen on TV before then.
It's funny, though, because a lot of the blood... I'm glad you mentioned that, because I didn't write it down as a note, but, like, maybe in the hands of a better director, I don't know, they were trying to make balloons a thing, or balloons scary. Yeah, they did it too much, so it became ineffective in the end, and I think a lot of the actors having to... I was really enjoying the actors having to react to these balloons and be terrified.
Yeah, especially the ones where it popped in the face and they couldn't react.
And I think there's one with an old lady, and she kind of goes...
She shits herself, yes.
That's it, yeah. She gets covered in, like, orange paint instead of red. So they got the mix wrong that day on set, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I do like the balloon that bounces down the street, though. Oh, that was dead good.
It floats.
Yeah.
That's another thing, like the paper boat. It's like a very classic image, isn't it?
Yes.
So, no, I'd definitely go and see, like, the new version of it. I mean, very interested to see it now.
Mm.
Do you still revisit this film and, like, can enjoy it, yeah?
Very often. I usually fall asleep. Yeah, I'll watch it, because now I've got the Blu-ray version. It just runs the whole way, whereas the old DVD, you have to flip it. So I just watch the one side. But now the Blu-ray version, I always fall asleep as John Ritter is going over the bridge.
Right.
And the Pennywise is waving to him as he's driving past in the taxi. It's usually after that I will always fall asleep.
Like, fuck this. The Uber scene, I'm done. So, yeah, I'd recommend the film, but as more of a kind of, like, interesting exercise of that period, really, because you've got Sleepwalkers and, you know, stuff like that. And
it is very of its time. Very of its time.
Yeah, I don't know. We've just seen this, like, King Renaissance now. This is back at a time when they were just knocking Stephen King's out left, right, and centre. I'm not sure if he actually sold the rights to all of his books or they were given away for so cheap, but there were so many, like, bad films made of his work. It, I think, for that time was, I guess, the best, apart from Christine and The Dead Zone, maybe the best, the next thing down from, like, good adaptions of his work until Shawshank and Green Mile came along.
Yeah.
So I'd kind of put it somewhere maybe in the middle.
I have got very high hopes for this new film, though. I am just interested to see how they do it and what they do to the end, because I hope they keep the clown, because that's the visual, that's the image, that's the driving force of this film. I'd like to see the Universal Monsters, but I don't know if they're going to get away with that. But I'd like to think that the clown, the fight the clown at the end. You know what I mean?
I just get worried with the kind of, because people like Stephen King couldn't watch the film, he was so scared. It's all very reminiscent of, like, this, like, weird marketing where they get the author or the progenitor of the idea, like James Cameron on board.
Yeah, Unilad posted it, so it's a bit like,
That's really funny, actually. Have you ever seen a poster and they're like, some crappy film and it's like, it was amazing. Then you look at it, it's
you
like
lad.
DVDsplat.com. It's like, oh. And then you actually look it up and it says this film wasn't amazing and they've just taken the wasn't out of and they've just, they've even cobbled it together from like a shitty source as well.
I don't know. I'm just dead cautious about it because I don't know what it's going to be. Like, from everything I've read and everything I've seen, it does appear to just be the kids.
Okay.
So, if they just stick to a one part, then obviously they avoid the fucking weird-ass ending. Mm. So, like, if they just stick to the final confrontation that the kids have with Pennywise, then it looks like... Because they have, like, a scrap with it. A scrap. They have, like, they go to this house on Kneebolt Street, and from all the trailers, Kneebolt Street is in the trailers, and that house is in the actual film. I'm assuming that it plays a big part of the film. And in, again...
In the books.
They go to that house, and, like, it... Well, Pennywise is there, and he basically comes, like, bursting out of a toilet and attacks the losers.
Right.
As a werewolf, like he's as a werewolf. I think it's the same werewolf that attacked Richie. And they end up forcing him back with that silver bullet gimmick. So if I had to guess, I'm going to say there's going to be like some ambiguous ending where I think they beat it as a kid and they think it's dead. But then at the end, something happens where he obviously reveals that he might not be. And then if it's a success, obviously they can do another one.
Right.
So,
I don't know. I hope so. I think the clown looks cool and stuff. And I think, you know, it's much darker. And I think Pennywise in the sewer with the water up to his nose and stuff looks good. So maybe it'll be good. Are you going to see this on the first day? Are you going out Friday night
to
see this?
No, Saturday, because my missus has to work. She's got to work and I can't find anyone to watch the kids. I could take him with me. Fucking Rocky, Rocky's World.
I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre when I was 6, and I'm not weird.
Yeah, you like clowns. You like clowns, don't you, son? Come on.
I always wondered about Ethan's collection of small shoes. have you got anything more to ask me about It 1990 by Tommy Lee Wallace, starring Tim Curry?
Did it scare you, or could you see it scaring a former you?
That's a great question. I'd probably say... I'm trying to be hindsight 2020, right? I don't know, because like I said, I grew up with a connection to like a VHS tap, essentially, but with the video store. So I saw literally
everything.
I think a few scenes, maybe the shower scene would have like freaked me out and stuff
not
like
the
that.
Opening scene scared me the most, I think, when he's hiding in the bed sheets and he's waving and then he's just serious and then he's like, oh, that's terrifying. Oh.
Yeah, and I think the bit that everyone's seen, and there's been a million memes made of that, when he's like looking out of the drain at the kid, and you can see his face like in the actual storm drain.
Yeah, and he asks, what sort of question is that? When he asks him if you want a balloon, he goes,
"Did it float?
What the fucking balloons have you got, dickhead?"
Well, kids are stupid; they get murdered all the time. I should know. It'd be so funny if like you'll be listening back to these in 5 years and it did actually turn out to be a serial killer.
Yeah, Ethan's in jail.
He kept joshing all the time about, you know, this, you know.
Yeah, nobody took him serious.
Murdering kids and shoes and, you know, drawing skins. Oh, one thing I did want to touch on. Jonathan Brandis, who we mentioned earlier in the show, who committed suicide weirdly in 2003, along with another actor called Brad Renfrew, who's in Sleepers, that kind of
film
with Kevin Bacon and Brad Pitt and stuff.
Good weird film, though.
Although, when I saw that, like, the theatre, cinema erupted in hilarity, was laughing their ass off. I nearly fell out of my seat. It just got infectious. When the kid says to Kevin Bacon, "What do you want?" He goes, "A blowjob." Just the way he delivered the line, it was just like a random thing to come out of his mouth. Like literally the entire cinema just broke out laughing. It was like
ruined the film a little bit for you.
Not I think what the filmmakers intended, but hey, there you go. But yeah, Brad Renfrew was in that. He is now no longer with us. Corey Haim is no longer with us. They all had drink and drug problems.
Corey Feldman's fucking weird.
Corey Feldman's weird, and two of those deaths, maybe the third, were suicides. And I think last month Elijah Wood came out and said this, and Corey Feldman, sorry, the living Corey, said this a couple of years ago, that Hollywood is run by a cabal of evil paedophiles, the very same story we've heard with, like,
great
British
name for
politics.
A band, Evil Paedophiles.
We are the evil paedophiles. Hello, Dudley.
We need a ride home.
So, yeah, I don't know. Corey Feldman said he couldn't name names. I'm not sure if there's, like, an embargo on him speaking out, but he swore, like, 2 years ago he was going to go on the news and start naming people.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of names swirling around this. There's actually, listeners, if you want to go on YouTube, it's actually there. There's a documentary called An Open Secret, which is about the court case against Bryan Singer when that guy came out and said he took me to all these, like, gay pool parties and... it was fabulous, but then we had sex and he promised to put me in a film. He didn't. I felt like he molested me and stuff. So I don't know. Love your work, Brian. So, yeah, I don't know.
X-Men 2 is really good.
It's a very strange world we live in. It's, I don't know. But I don't know. You see all these, like, young actors who don't make it out of this life and, like die early for whatever reason, be it for alcohol or drugs or, like, actual suicide.
Yeah.
It's almost like a weird X-Files episode. If any of that stuff is true, it's just like, whoa.
Deep, man.
There's something far more evil than it out there. I don't know. It's
far more evil than an alien cloud, alien fucking thing.
Not even you can describe it. Okay.
One of the final questions.
What is it? Can you explain in a concise manner what it actually is?
Right. And
Forget the turtle bit. Just describe it.
It's a female... alien type light based form. Apparently it's like a bright orange light in its truest form, because that is the Deadlights,
and the Deadlights are connected to this Stephen King multiverse, which the Dark Tower's part.
Yeah, like there's a lot of Deadlights in a couple of his other stories, but nobody shines in this one, which is interesting. Nobody shines, boy.
Well, we'll get to that, because I think our potential next episode is another Stephen King film, The Dead Zone, which has got lots of sort of shining in.
Yeah.
Or at least a highly buffed sheen. Fucking hell, it was very Alan Partridge, wasn't it? As a parting thing, listeners, as with always, watch the films we're discussing and stuff. But
people are very passionate about this film. People that you do find that like this film love it. Like, you don't just think, hey, it's all right. People either love it or they go, oh, that was shit. Like, people will go to
the people that love
film.
It. What they love it so much, but you, like you're saying, it doesn't hang together that well.
No.
And it falls apart at the end.
Yeah.
So does the love come from the first half and the kids? Is it the kids stand by me portions of the stuff?
Yeah, I think it's just the Tim Curry aspect of it. People have got this weird relationship with Tim Curry.
Is there not a fan edit? Because there's like a fan edit of Prometheus out there now with all the stuff in.
Mm.
If you want to contact either of us on social media, I can send you links to that. There's one of The Hobbit where they've balled it down into two films and apparently got rid of all the Legolas stuff, and the film works brilliantly now as two parts. Mm. So is there not a fan edit? They've like cut it down even more. It's more. Is that even possible to make a case?
Yeah, I'd say you could make a really, really solid...
Like, lose half an hour, maybe?
Yeah, I'd say a solid 120-minute film. Oh, what did you think of the music?
Okay, the music, really...
It's quite striking at times, isn't it?
Well, it swings wildly between this crappy, awful, synthy TV score, which they must have shoved in last minute, or the composer did this orchestral score, which was very John Williams-y at the start, and then he must have gone, there's your hour of music, and they've gone...
It's a 17-hour film.
Fuck! And then he's panicked and had to put it together. But like the orchestral stuff, I thought was very good.
It's good, isn't it?
But then there was a lot of other jangly like stuff, which I think maybe had been put in after the fact or to kind of like fill out the time. I don't know.
And then a lot of songs by the fucking Temptations in there.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's kind of like puts you in a gives you a sense of.
I do like those songs though. I really
time and
song.
Space, doesn't it? When they're like
sick montages as well. Sick montages. We need a montage to show that these characters are progressing.
I think this
is
your Into the Night. This is your Into the Night, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it is.
So you pick one fine date. Should have been It versus Into the Night.
You all taste so much better when you're afraid.
Rebev, kill it!
Kill! Oh, you are priceless, brat. I am eternal child. I am the eater of worlds and of children. And you are
nice. So Ethan McKinley, Was it worth it?
Hey! It was worth it, but only just edging over the line. And that's more of a curiosity slash museum piece.
It's one of these films you have to see this film.
I think reconvening on this, perhaps at a later episode, even if we talk about it for only 10 minutes, is like the new one.
I'll be for that.
Where I ask you how it measured up, or we do like a bonus one that we slot in between regular shows where we talk about the new one for half an hour where we've both seen it, but you obviously have a deeper...
We can do an actual review. I'll be up for that.
Yeah, you do like a deep. You've got a deeper like relationship with this film, obviously. So it's gonna like be interesting seeing this can eclipse the old one.
I'm just cautious because I hope it's good.
So I don't know. Yeah, I'd recommend it, but as a curiosity, watch it for Tim Curry, really.
Yes.
Because it's I guess apart from Darkness and Frankenfurter, this was his kind of final signature performance.
Motherfucker, Home Alone 2.
Before he just kind of essentially appeared as himself in films, playing like the hotel manager in Home Alone 2.
We love you.
Yeah, all the like the pervy kind of suave criminal in the Phantom, or the kind of crazy guy from Congo, the Lost City of Zin. He's got this weird accent and stuff. He's always good fun to watch. He's great value.
Yeah, he's like a Christopher Walken type character, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. Chris Walken tends to be the same in all films. I think Tim Curry, obviously, because he's got a theatre musical background, he's much more flamboyant and kind of fun to watch. Finding out he was straight was a shock to me when years ago. I was like, really?
Yeah, I can see that.
But yeah, I don't know. He's always a watchable Tim Curry. I just think he fell into, unless he just doesn't give a fuck, his career kind of fell into more cheese, but it's not bad cheese. No cheese is bad. I love cheese.
Yeah, we all love cheese. There's one thing we can say on the Was It Worth It show. We endorse cheese.
So, yeah, check it out, folks. See what you think. Tell us what if you thought, was it worth it? But, yeah, what's the next episode, Toffer?
It is The Dead Zone.
Another Stephen King film starring Chris Walken, directed by David Cronenberg, who directed...
No. I've had a crash.
So I'm Charlton Heston and you're better at Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
Nova, the dad said mama.
Find the show at Was It Worth It Pod on the Twitter. Ethan, drop your old shit.
Ethan will retweet that show because I seem to forget to do it. You can find me at 2 Minute Terminator. You can listen to my 300 strong Terminator-based show. You can find me at Ethan McKinley UK. And listen to my interview show, Questionable, there. And you can also find me at Was It Worth It? Liking all its posts.
Yes, we'll see.
Bye.
Yeah, boy.